Hello, and welcome to Season 3 of A Marvellous Lunch Break. Bitten, beaten, and bad at acting, Tobey Maguire swung onto screens in 2002 as our first proper live-action Spider-Man. 18 years later, we've been watching this movie to find answers to the important questions, such as, what were they thinking? What happened to Kirsten Dunst's career? Why does her name feel like it's missing a vowel? And also, is there anyone whose face you want to forget more than Willem Dafoe's? Oh. We'll be discussing all of this and the rest of the movie. But first, joining me today, as always, is Miss Marvel herself, Anna Harrison.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, I'm so good. I can't believe we're back.
Well, welcome back for season three. And welcoming back as well our own eight-legged freak, Agent Martin Carter. How are you?
Well, I was going to say that I'm really happy to be back, but not anymore.
Hello as well to all our listeners from around the world. If this is the first time you're tuning in, or if you're back for more, do know there are spoilers in this podcast. And if you're listening to us, please remember to review it and subscribe to us so you can get more of this in your ears more regularly. Also, follow us on our Instagram account. Anna, what's the details?
A Marvellous Lunch Break.
And while you're at it, do you want to tell our fans the plans for season three?
Oh my God, yes. So, for anyone that didn't listen to our Christmas special, go back and listen to it. It's great. We are kicking off season three, Spider Season. So, we are...
We can't get away with
that. Thanks, Mark. That's all we're legally allowed to sing. So, we are watching our way through all the Spider-Man movies, classic Tobey Maguire years, amazing Spider-Man. We're going to do a quick recap of our Tom Holland newbies, new entries to the MCU, Venom, and Into the Spider-Verse. And this is all counting down to Black Widow.
Well, I mean, Black Widow's like a spider.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, it's kind of
it's a spider-themed season. It's great.
Totally. And it works because throughout, like, interspersed here and there, we'll have new Venom, potentially, new mutants. So we'll have some specials in there. But Black Widow, we needed something good on the horizon to pull us through some of these movies, I think. And the new trailer that landed last week, very, very excited.
I watched it. I'm a trailer agnostic. That's my New Year's resolution. Oh. Stop watching trailers.
That's not a bad shout, really. I might not watch any more from here on out.
It did me so well in 2019. Mm. I didn't watch the trailers for Infinity War. I didn't watch the trailers for Star Wars. I've watched, like, my new policy is the first teaser trailer.
Yep.
Then nothing.
It's a really good plan, actually.
Seen the first teaser for Star Wars. I didn't read or anything until I went to see the movie, and I just stayed well away. And I thought it was great, which turns out isn't a common opinion. but I loved it, so that's all that matters in my life.
Excellent.
As well, Black Widow, I've seen the first teaser. Mm. I thought that looks amazing.
It's going to be... I have very, very high expectations. I have like Winter Soldier level expectations.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
It's pretty high.
Damn.
Anyway, we're not talking about Black Widow. Jeez.
Right. Too soon.
Is there any other Spider movies that we're missing in this series? Anything that doesn't feature someone in a blue and a red suit?
So we are going to be doing New Mutants. It's finally coming. I'm nervous about this one because I don't do horror, and supposedly this is like a horror movie, but that one
I mean, some of these Spider-Man could be classified as a horror, if you know what I mean.
No, I don't know what you mean.
No. I'm super excited to rewatch Into the Spider-Verse. I haven't watched it since I watched it for the very first time, and I'm really excited for a rewatch of that.
Well, I've recently realized that I've never seen Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Oh, wow, it's terrible.
I've never seen Venom.
Don't say that.
I don't spoiler. Sorry, spoilers.
I've never seen Venom. I've got some brand new movies to watch this time around.
I feel like I've watched the most out of everyone.
I've not seen Venom either.
Look at me being ahead of the game. Yeah. What a change.
I've seen all of the Spider-Man movies but Venom.
Yeah.
Which isn't really a Spider-Man movie, but we'll let it happen. Yeah.
So Spider-Man's like your favorite superhero? Is like his top three, right?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'd say the Spider-Man's top three.
Okay. Mm.
I think he's a classic. There's just something about him, which is, I think, you can imagine yourself as Spider-Man.
Totally.
You know what I mean? If you say, oh, imagine you got superpowers, you're like, you're swinging off of things. Do you know what I mean? You stick to walls. It's just, anyone could be Spider-Man.
Yeah.
All it takes is that you get bitten by a spider or something.
Yeah. In weird, weird circumstances.
He's never really been that far up on my list, but I've always enjoyed the films. Mm. But it was via memory. So whether that changes after the rewatch, we'll see.
I have had a question asking if we're going to be watching Morbius.
What's Morbius?
It's a good question. I'm not entirely sure. It's a new Jared Leto movie, part of the Sony superhero universe. But Morbius is some sort of like vampire-like guy. I know nothing about him, but supposedly there was like a flash of like a Spider-Man-esque something in the trailer. I don't know what it is. I meant to watch the trailer beforehand, but so he exists.
This is not a Sony cinematic universe podcast, though. This is a Marvel cinematic universe podcast.
Well, I mean, but we're watching these movies.
We're watching Venom, and it, you know, Mobius is a Marvel character.
Yeah. Discussion.
TBC.
July 2020 looks like the release date.
Yeah.
So
it's a very crowded field around
that. End July as well. 30th of July.
I can't revise my schedule again.
So we're really at the back end of.
Okay. Well, if we're wildly missing each other, so Black Widow's May.
I don't think that's going to happen. Do you remember us at the end of season one? I couldn't stand you.
So Black Widow's May 1st. And we'll do like our Spider-Man wrap up, obviously, after that. And we've got Eternals, which I'm so excited about happening in November. So we'll definitely be back for that.
We've got Venom 2.
Yeah, at some point that release date hasn't been confirmed. But that's supposedly coming out 2020 sometime.
Who knows, Gambit might come out this year as well.
Oh, man.
Don't tell me.
After 20 years.
Can you imagine?
No, it's definitely not coming out. That movie's never getting made.
Oh, man.
You know, yeah, okay, I'm up for anything.
Yeah.
Morbius, we'll probably go see it, so let's talk about it, even if we just do something quick.
Cool.
Martin, if you don't want to see it, you don't have to. But, you know.
I'll see you there.
It's Jared Leto. He's, you know, he's...
Yeah. I've seen a picture.
He's not terrible.
Some weird vampire makeup. It is crazy.
Maybe we could do a vampire season next year.
Can we get started on this season?
Yeah.
This is a lot of preamble. Like, our four listeners have probably left by now.
15 seconds, skip.
Okay, so usually we kick off our episodes with Anna's one-minute roundup of the movie. So if you can't be bothered to listen to the rest of it, just pay a lot of attention for the next 1 minute, and you will get a good insight into what happened.
My hair is really big today.
Anna, 60 seconds are going on the clock.
Oh my God, okay.
We're at a new season, so we've got a new record. You are 0 wins, 0 losses, okay?
Okay.
It was a rough season for you in season 2.
It really was.
So let's give it your best. I believe in you.
Thanks, man.
Stopwatch in 3, 2, 1. Go.
Intro voiceover from our lovable loser, Peter Parker, bullied, awkward, and unable to get to his bus stop on time. On a class field trip, we meet mumbly Harry, rubber-faced Norman Osborn, and the Spider of Destiny, who bites Peter when he tries to bond with his red-haired obsession, Mary Jane. When super smart Peter decides his horrible symptoms do not need a hospital, Norman is losing his sciencey shit while over his Axe super formula. He decides to dose himself up, and murdery Green Goblin is unleashed. But things are looking up for Peter, besting the school bully, learning your powers montage, and cage fighting to raise some dough. But Peter's selfish actions lead to the death of poor old Uncle Ben, and Peter realizes with great power comes great responsibility. Cute crime fighting and pleb commentary montage with the side of rage from J. Joe and Jameson. Norman takes being fired very badly, blows shit up, and Spidey saves perpetually barless Mary Jane twice and gets an iconic MTV award-winning In the Rain upside-down kiss. But the most awkward Thanksgiving ever, the penny drops from Norman that bleeding Peter is Spider-Man. Now the Green Meanie is gunning for poor old Aunt May and streaky Mary Jane. In final showdown time, Spidey saves both this lady and a trolley full of kids with the help of feisty New Yorkers until Greenie drags him off to throw him through some walls. Things are looking grim, but thanks to his Spidey sense, Peter is victorious and Green Goblin is shish kebobbed in the nuts by his own glider. But things are not okay. Harry thinks Spidey killed his dad, and MJ and love are nobly sacrificed for responsibility, and swinging through the skies is our friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Stop.
Oh my God.
Do you want to know your time?
Oh, yes, please.
What do you think it was?
Oh, it must have been so close. 58.
We should keep a record of this season, right?
Okay.
You're 59.46.
Whoa!
You were there.
And you got in a great
nearly
MTV Award Best Kiss reference.
Yeah.
That was a great start to season one.
Oh.
59.46. Someone take a note of this.
Okay. I'm going to be better with posting the script onto our Instagram stories this year. So if people think they can best me, you know, give it a try.
I think, yeah, that's a great idea. I think that's a great idea. And I think, you know what, as well, I think it's a testament to your copywriting skills, right? That you're able to write something that you know will be exactly a minute in length to say.
Oof.
Well done. Okay.
Good work.
Start.
Let's get into this then. Let's talk about the cast of this movie. is pretty short. Some movie, you know, we're still in a post-Infinity War era where there is a cast list that is longer than the bloody script for the movie.
Yeah. Remember when we played that game in the wrap-up for Endgame and we were just guessing characters in the IMDb thing and you had like a double-sided IMDb printout?
Do you want to play that for this? Because I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 characters worth mentioning.
Are we doing just character names? Yeah, not
You can do the character name or the actor name. So
Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man.
Doing
cheers or booze?
Cheers and booze if you get it right. Yeah.
Yay!
I was pleasantly surprised.
Tobey.
Kirsten Dunst as Mary Jane.
Oh. Yeah.
She's not given enough of the right stuff to do, really.
Why is her mouth always open?
Always open. With the tiniest teeth you've ever seen.
So Kirsten Dunst, third build in this movie.
Oh. Third build.
Third build, yeah.
William Dafoe.
Yep.
Green Goblin.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know you're not a fan, Dan, but man.
The gobber. The green gobber.
He just looks evil.
He does his face, man. I love William Dafoe, though. I love him.
James Franco. Is it James Franco?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is James Franco. Harry. As Harry, yes.
Who knew he would blossom into such a...
Weirdo.
A hunky bisexual.
Yeah, well, so this was like he was very much in his heartthrob, like,
he was
so
like the
pretty.
Alternative heartthrob, yes, wasn't yes. he? He still, was the yin to Toby's yang.
Totally, and had that still kind of like freaky
What was Tobey Maguire a heartthrob?
He was like your boy next door. Yeah. Especially after the spider bite. You get like a glimpse of him in like his jeans.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. His shredded abs. Mm. That is weird. I didn't like it.
That was a moment where I've got to say I was impressed with the CGI kind of right before, you know, when he starts to get like really sick and everything. He's really like emaciated looking. Mm. Like that was a CGI thing to make him look sick and I thought it held up.
All right. Okay. We've got, you know, you need to pick up the pace. We've got four more.
Ben and Aunt May.
Uncle Ben and Aunt May, yeah.
The scary guy who runs the Bugle.
Yeah.
J. Jonah Jameson, one of the best with... J.K. Simmons.
Well done, J.K. Simmons.
Remains one of the best comic book likeness of a character. Yeah.
He's just like, spot on. He's just so animated.
So good.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So the
cigars, the pinstripes, mustache, all of it.
One of the highlights of this movie is J.K. Simmons' J. Jonah Jameson. You've got one left. So I'll run down who we've got. We've got Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. We've got Willem Dafoe as Green Goblin. You can do your cheers and boos now if you like. Kirsten Dunst as Mary Jane Watson. Yeah. James Franco as Harry Osborn. Yeah. Cliff Robertson as Ben Parker. Yeah. Rosemary Harris as May Parker. J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson. Yeah. And then finally, who am I missing?
Flash?
Macy Gray.
Flash.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
That, come on. Talking about dating a movie. Macy Gray.
Joe Manganiello as Flash Thompson.
Future Magic Mike performer.
Which is, you know, just a great addition to this movie.
Yeah, let's get a 40-year-old to play a high school student. Everyone looks so old. So old.
Well, wasn't Tim McGuire like 27?
He was.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about time and setting and place. Okay. So this movie came out in 2002, and all of these people are like mid to late 20s, and this is a movie set in high school, right? So we've got large adult actors playing kids, which in itself is a bit weird.
Yeah.
As well, thinking about the era that this movie came out in, you know, some of our most recent... superhero movies before that were probably mid to late 90s, and you're thinking your Batmans that came out around that era. So how do you think it fits? Time and a place? Do you think this movie feels like it's from that era?
I mean, yes. I mean, it felt very much of... I mean, I loved this movie when it came out. Like, I'm just going to say this off the bat. When it came out, like, this movie just... absolutely captivated me. I saw it a lot when I was younger. I watched it repeatedly. And like watching it again very much put me right back in like the age I was and sort of experiencing that as like a high school student and feeling very like connected with the characters in that way. Watching it now...
Did you also look like you're in your late 20s?
Well, that's sort of the thing. Like, it's weird kind of looking back. I didn't feel kind of alienated from them given how they look like 30 years. Flash looks like older now than he did like
he
years.
He looks like he's dropping his kids off at school.
Yes, yes. And I can kind of understand why they did that. They didn't want to cast like really young looking people because that would have made Peter look even older. But that was a weird choice. That being said, like, that was kind of the style back then. And because the choice this movie made to not keep him in high school, they clearly were going to put him in college kind of as soon as possible. I can see why they wouldn't cast someone young to fill that role. But it's especially what we know, what we see now from Tom Holland, you can see like what a massive missed opportunity that is, really.
Oh my God, guys.
What?
We've forgotten to eat a snack.
Well, let's hear what Martin has to say first.
Well,
and then
I was going
to
do a sneeze. Oh, right. Not now. But I think, am I? No, I'm not. But I think it's also like films around that time also like had, I felt like teenagers were all old around
that. Yeah,
totally. Like 10 Things I Hate About You, Cruel Intentions.
Yes.
Like they were all kind of set around high schools, but everyone seemed a little bit older than they should be. I think it sounded like
that's because they were.
Yeah, so I didn't think it felt too out of place. And I still think Tobey Maguire manages to still play quite young.
Agree.
I think it's just everyone else around him. Particularly James Franco, I think, looks a bit like a middle-aged man.
Yeah, totally.
But
talk about Norman Osborn. Jeez.
Yeah.
I didn't pick up on it as much as you do, I don't think. But I think that's maybe because I rewatched this and I also felt like, I think I was in like year 9, so which is like the third year of high school in the UK. So it really reminded me of like being back in that summer where like you would go to the cinema every weekend and over the summer like twice a week and you would just go see this film over and over again. I must have seen this film so many times.
Totally.
It was great.
How about you, Dan?
I think it's, I don't know, I just think that they look older, you know, it's high school, and get over it, but I just don't, it's not how you'd see a movie today. I don't, not just comparing it to the recent Spider-Mans, but I think it'd be really weird if this movie came out with people that age playing teenagers today.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're a lot more normalized to having young actors play younger roles. You know, whether that's your extremes in terms of things like Stranger Things, where you have, you know, in season one there, you had really young child actors playing kids. You didn't have, the wrong age or whatever. So I think probably it was right for the time, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's not, it doesn't hold up for me today.
Yeah. I think also the thing to remember is like now we're like studios have the power to churn out movies in a way that I don't think was as common back then. So what was the gap between Spider-Man 1 and Spider-Man 2? That was it's 2 years, isn't it? So I think that probably really played into the decision making as well.
But I don't understand. I just don't understand why. I think the movie studios have a lot of confidence to deviate from the original source material now, and I think the much writers for this style of movie are much more able to be faithful to the source material while not getting lost in the detail.
Sure.
And I think there is nothing in this movie, you know, back then either they were source material or they were nowhere near it.
Yeah.
And I think with this one, it's like there's nothing in this movie that holds them to having to have set it in high school. You know,
I don't know. I think because this is like the one of the first Marvel-esque films to come out in that time period, I think they were extremely faithful to the main points of Spider-Man's story. And I think it would have been really weird for it to not be set in high school. Imagine if you had like an office job and we sat in a cubicle and was like,
but I think like also,
but they could have made it university, they could have made it college, you know what I mean? They could have still had the setting and the theme, but not be like
maybe. But kids. I think like the thing that this movie is pinned on is an origin story, and to have Peter Parker start not being in high school, even though it wasn't the bulk of the movie, I think that it just wouldn't have worked in the same way for this being in so many ways people's first introduction to Spider-Man. And certainly like cinematically, and I think there's still something really important about that choice being made in high school, because at the end of the day, Peter is a person who just doesn't fit in, and that's like a really common sense in high school. And then just because he's been bit by the spider, that now carries on for the rest of his life. And I think kind of taking that high school experience of what the hell is going on with me, no one gets me, now I feel
I'm
like
a middle-aged man running for
a
school
middle-aged
bus.
Man. I've got the weight of the world on my shoulders. Starting that and grounding that in high school, and then like allowing that familiar bit makes it, I think, it gave like kind of people a touch point to then carry his journey into his like later life in this film, basically.
The conclusion is it's just you that's got a problem with how old Tobey Maguire is.
I mean, and the rest of them. So let's just roll the clock back for a moment and talk about this snack before we go on to Peter Parker's creepy
okay.
finger.
Is that Christmas theme?
Yes. So
is this your leftovers for Christmas?
Not entirely, maybe. But you know, they're still in date, so I've got some festive flavor Christmas tree tortilla chips. With them, they're vegan friendly, Martin.
It's veg-anuary.
Yeah, veg-anuary. And I've got some spicy salsa hummus to go along with it. But yes, they are very, they're very Christmas themed.
Are you observing veg-anuary?
I am going through this awful. I've got a PT.
Okay.
So much like Tobey Maguire, within 40 minutes of a lifespan of.
Turkey
movie,
stuffing flavor, snavery snacks. Snavery.
I'm
going to
be
snacks.
Svelte with a big chest.
Hell yeah! We will document that journey on our Instagram.
So I'm going to have three of these chips, crisps, okay. And then no one is allowed to let me have any more.
Are you going
to
have a turkey and stuffing flavor savory snack?
I'll have one of those.
So I can't. I don't think these are vegetarian.
Okay, I'm not going to have those. But I am literally counting every calorie, and it's really.
They're vegetarian. They've got a little green symbol on the front.
I've got a V.
Oh, so they do. They are vegetarian.
It's turkey and stuffing flavor.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, because it's just okay. But then, all right.
And then,
more?
Oh my
only
god, someone passed me one of these snacks yeah, already. We need to talk about them.
Festive flavor.
Right. Okay.
Oh, that tastes meaty.
Oh wow. This looks like a season finale sort of thing.
Well, it's a season premiere type of thing.
Okay.
So if should we just explain that? Like, if you've never listened to this podcast before,
oh, yeah.
It's called A Marvelous Lunch Break. So we have a snack segment.
Yeah.
We're adhering to all elements of the name.
So this is good if you like.
Oh god, his head's falling
like
off.
To listen to people eat, but if that freaks you out, then this is not the segment for you. So what we've got in front of us are out of date almost Christmas snacks.
They're good until
festive flavored Christmas tree tortilla chips are green.
And Anna has also brought a Spider-Man cake.
Hell yeah, I have.
Very nice. Spider-Man. Did you make it yourself?
I
know
not.
How you said you're only going to have three of these.
Yeah.
My question is, are you going to even want three of these?
What? Are they bad?
What is the flavor of festive?
You know,
they're Christmas tree shaped.
Yeah.
You know, like.
These are quite tasty.
You know
they're
what
spinach,
I think these taste
spinach
like?
Spinach flavored.
You know what I think these taste like?
What?
You know the cardboard packaging that the cereals come in?
Oh. Like recyclable.
I'm going to need some of that jalapeno.
They are the last of the Morrison's festive season.
No
berries
wonder.
The dip's good.
At least we've got
Oh,
that.
You know what it is? It's the festive spice flavors. What do you think that actually is?
Okay.
No idea. All right.
So how are we going to eat this cake, or is it just for looking at?
No, I'm going to, I've got some.
Oh, wow. Here we go.
Anna brought a knife.
So, if we just grab the cake, it's Spider-Man's
head
and eyes on a backdrop. What characters feature on the
backdrop? I can see Green Goblin, I can see Dr. Octopus, I can see Venom.
We've got the lizard.
I'm not sure
it's
who
a lizard
this
or is it
is
croc?
At the top.
It might be croc.
One sec, I don't know.
That made it look like you were flicking off Spider-Man. That's fine. Taking a picture for the Instagram.
A marvelous lunch break.
Hold it up so I can see our characters here.
How about I'll hold it next to my head for
this is
for
such
scale.
Boring content for our listeners.
It's not. We're describing a cake.
We promise we'll actually talk about the movie
spin
next.
It so I can see the backdrop. So I can see the characters on here. Yeah, we've definitely got Green Goblin.
I don't know who he is at the top.
Let me just take it. That's Spider-Man.
Hobgoblin?
No.
we've got...
I don't think these crisps are bad.
We've got Dr. Octopus. We've got Venom. That at the top is... Thingy, what's his name? Oh, why have I forgotten it? Thingy plays him in Far From Home. Not Far From Home, in Homecoming. Yeah, Vulture.
Oh.
It's Vulture. Green Goblin, Lizard. Well, yeah. Okay.
Nice.
Very good. Well, I'm going to chuck this over your way again so you can cut us some cake.
Yep, you guys carry on talking about the movie.
And I'll start us off by talking about Spider-Man, his powers... His power acquisition, you know, this red and blue spider bites him. It's a little bit on the nose, but whatever. It's origin story. Let's get past it.
One tiny piece.
And then Peter Parker starts to discover that he has powers.
let me ask you a question. If you saw your hand swell up to that degree, do you think that you would maybe seek some help?
Yeah, totally. Yep. Have you seen the bit in you know, the new Star Trek movies, the J.J. Abrams Star Treks, where Chris Pine's hands go massive?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And his tongue swells and he can't get the word Romulans out. It's very reminiscent of that. I think I would almost immediately seek help.
Yeah, or at least ask the woman in the, who I feel like has been in everything. She looked very familiar to me, the Asian scientist woman. Like, at least ask her, maybe.
Excuse me, I was bitten by a spider, and also we noticed that there was a spider missing on the tour.
Yep.
And I saw it on the TV screen. I thought I might call it out.
Do you know what, though? I liked the pace at which this was done. Like, yep. I was a bit hesitant going into it, being like, oh, we've seen the Tom Holland ones fairly recently. Do I really need to watch another origin story? But I had forgotten how quickly it moved through quite a lot of those
I agree
things.
With that.
But I think that's to the detriment of later in the film, where it feels quite bloated with, like, sitting with Aunt May in hospital, blah, 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 blah.
Go, spider, go!
Yeah, but I did quite like it, like how quickly he climbed up a building, how quickly he swung off a building. I thought that was fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just do want to, you know, they could have done the whole movie him figuring out his powers. Fair enough, I get that. It's probably good that we didn't have to suffer through that, but it still just felt a little too quick. Like, he didn't have much failure to begin with.
That's true.
I would have at least liked him to have fallen off of one thing. Mainly because I just wanted to see him in pain, because he annoys me.
Oh my god. Well, he smacked his face in, like, he smacked himself into that. I don't know what his plan was there, but when he had the web and he
went
swung
into a billboard.
Yeah.
And, you know, he lost his uncle via his stupid actions to do with being Spider-Man.
Yeah, stupid Spider-Man. Jeez. But I think some of his powers, I don't know whether some of this Spider-Man version's powers are. They don't to me feel like that. Oh great, I could be Spider-Man, because I don't want creepy finger hairs. I don't necessarily.
But you're facing the wrong direction. You wouldn't be able to grip onto anything if the barbs were going on that way.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
And they come out of his skin, and it's just all very.
So what's the problem? Do you think they grounded it too much, like in science? Be like, if you were a human spider.
Well, they didn't ground it in science, but they tried to make it look like they ground it in science.
But that's what I mean. I mean, he's a. He's a Spider-Man. He can't ground it in science.
He can. He's bitten by a spider, and he gets mutant powers as a result.
So do you prefer the narrative of the Tom Hollands, where it's like technology that's allowing him to do
that? I mean, you know, I don't like the idea that he's got little holes in his wrists where web.
Oh yeah, organic web shoots. I have some issues with that as well.
Spits out. And okay, his reflexes and his sense is all well and good, but actually, the organicness of some of the elements of his powers are just weird, rather than fun to watch. I think
I didn't mind it.
What do you? So the big scene that it all builds to is him on the top of the building trying to get his web to shoot all over New York. Something that he tries in later movies as well. So do you find that scene to be, you know, was that a high point for you? Because that to me was, I don't know, I was just groaning at all of this.
Oh really?
I think I went in probably with a bad view of this movie.
I enjoyed this film, and I really enjoyed rewatching it. I felt, for the most part, apart from maybe the later third, I enjoyed all of those origin, the ones you see done over and over again. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed rewatching those bits of it. I think they were done with a bit more humor and humility than I remembered. I thought we were going to go in and it'd be like really crass and really like. Obvious and overstated, but I thought it stood the test of time. Like, given it was over 18 years ago the film came out, I still really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think that is such an interesting point, this idea of like, so you've got sort of the end of the spectrums on how superheroes kind of handle their powers. You've got like someone like Tony, who's just all, you know, look at me, I'm Iron Man, I'm awesome. And Spider-Man always has been the more, like, humble is maybe not right the right word, but, like, a kid who's suddenly has these amazing powers and gets, like, kind of caught up in it. And I really like, particularly that, and I felt there was a lot of joy sucked out of Peter's life later in the film. I did like that kind of start bit where, my God, this is exciting, that, woo, and he, like, realizes he's climbing up the wall. Yeah. And even the point when he, like, fights Flash in the high school, like, that is, I mean, come on, that is such, like,
that's
wish
iconic.
Fulfillment. Yeah.
It's iconic.
It is such wish fulfillment for, like, bullied people yeah. in high school to get those powers to, like, you know, and, but then
do you
action.
Think everyone overreacted to that? Because I was watching this being like, everyone knows that Flash is dicking on this kid.
Mm.
And then suddenly he punches him once and everyone's like, shame, Peter. You know, I think that was a bit of an overreaction on everyone else's part.
I think, oh my God, this cake is so dry.
I know it's dry, but can I have more, please?
You bet. Do you want an eyeball? Would you like
I'll have anything you're willing to give me.
Ooh, those are incredible. Oh, they are.
Still might not eat it.
So... I thought this was actually kind of interesting. I liked that there was a bit of a subversion of expectation about, so he beat up the bully, and rather than being, like, exalted by his classmates, everyone was like, what the fuck? Where I think that probably would kind of be the reaction. Like, I remember high school, and, like, it's so hard to think back on, but, like, the kids that were really picked on, the weird ones, that for whatever reason, they were just chosen to be, like, they can't do anything right. They will never... elevate themselves above, you know, and I can remember them kind of like trying. Oh God, it's so hard to think about, but like trying to do things to kind of lift themselves above their station, and everyone
cringy weirdos.
Yeah. Oh no, don't. But yeah, and like, and everyone else just being like, nah, it doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah,
you like you're weird, and we will always think you're weird. And like the fact they were cheering him on during the fight—that's just idiot high school kids. They always cheer on a fight no matter what. I did think it was really funny. In that scene, though, there's, like, when Parker's doing one of the moves, you can sort of see Harry and MJ in the background reacting to it, and Harry does this thing where he's, like, he's really surprised what Peter's doing, but he also, like, kind of lifts his hand to, like, kind of cover his mouth like a little demure lady, like, not all the way, just, like, his first, like, couple bits of his fingers, just being like, ooh, and it's, like, that's, it's such a funny face.
So, I mean, as a creepy weirdo, though, I don't feel that in high school I would have ever... not said something if I caught someone's lunch tray and them in midair.
Oh, yeah.
And then just stared at them intently for, like, a minute.
Mm.
It just seems a little forced in the way that he's, like, just silent in all awkward situations.
But this is coming from the person who, like, has suspended all realism in all of the other films that we've watched. And you love things when things are, like, off the wall and
not in season three.
Just, like of course it's gonna like
but
gloss
Spider-Man's
over the finer
details.
But
Spider-Man's like the real one. You know what I mean? Spider-Man is like out of all of the characters. Spider-Man is the real character because he's the kid. He's the one that's you know from an actual place on Earth. He's acquired his powers out of a freak accident, and he's the in the Marvel universe. He's kind of the one that. You know, as I said already, I feel you can relate to because you're like, hey, this is just a normal dude, and he's got powers, but he's also trying to live a life, and you know, he's got relationships with individuals, and he's not got this, you know, muscles like Captain America. He's just Peter Parker.
But I think in the other movies, they play that awkwardness out as well, but in like different ways. I mean, okay, so maybe it was a little bit strange, like that whole just. Silent stare. By the way, that was a practical effect. They did
the silent stare.
No, well, yeah.
It was all CGI.
Oh wow, it's not aged at all. It's timeless CGI.
No, but he caught everything and caught Mary Jane. Like caught the had the tray and caught all the things as they were falling. That was a practical effect. He actually did that.
Wow.
Tobey Maguire does his own stunts.
But I don't know. I didn't have a problem with that. I think there are definitely other moments that happen later on. Because I think Tobey Maguire played the awkwardness really well. And I appreciate that it's one of those things that you can tell it's... Well, he made some kind of strange acting choices at times. I really appreciate that Tobey Maguire acts in such a way that, like, he doesn't care what he looks like. Like, he's going to make that weird fucking crying face if, like, the situation calls on it. He's not trying to sacrifice, like, whatever emotion might be coming across his face, for the sake of like remaining like a you know, potential heartthrob or something like that. But
let me just, before we move on,
yeah,
let me just read you my notes.
Okay.
Verbatim.
God.
Creepy finger hairs, just a weird nerd. When he catches Mary Jane in the lunch train, just stares at her and doesn't say anything. He is such a creepy Doyle. Who says tally-ho? He cries ugly. Should have studied costume design.
Oh, he definitely should have studied costume design.
He was great.
Damn, he's good at that. Yeah.
But every incarnation of him is good at that, I think. I think you're in a bad mood when you watch this. I really enjoyed this film. I don't know what's wrong with you.
What parts did you like about the movie, Dan? Let's go there.
The weird 90s hair.
Okay.
That's under the positive section.
You love wrestling.
The wrestling, I thought, was incredible. I actually really liked the wrestling scene.
Did you?
Aside from the...
The one line that did not age well.
The one line that did not age well.
I was shocked. My inner woke just like exhaled.
What is it that he actually said? It's a nice shorts or nice costume. Did your husband make it for you? Oh, so bad. So
brilliant.
Bad.
I thought it was... aside from that, I thought that was the sort of, you know, comic bookiness that... Mm. That really then started to take the movie and say, this is pretty fun.
Yep.
It's just an absurd scene where it's like, I've gone to a wrestling dungeon where there's queues of people trying to beat some beefcake.
And I really loved the point of view shot where he was walking, where Spider-Man was walking to the wrestling ring and there was like the four like ringside girls all like
being pathetic wimp.
Being really horrible to him.
You're a loser. Fuck off.
It was great. I recently watched the new Hellboy film.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
And in that, Hellboy ends up in the wrestling ring with a wrestler who turns out to be a vampire, and it's a bit weird.
Cool.
But that was nowhere near as fun. And Hellboy's kind of fun and camp, but it was nowhere near as fun as Spider-Man. This was that was a good section.
I like that scene as well. Really good. And you could kind of like see a kid before he, you know, he gets driven home that these powers are a responsibility. Yeah, I'm super strong now. How can I earn some money? Wrestling. Yeah. That is what I'm going to do.
Why do you think he gets caught up on being like the human spider? Because the guy is like, the human spider, that's rubbish.
Yeah.
Spider-Man. He's like, no, it's the human spider. It's like, what do you think he's going to do? Get, like, falsely credited for the fight?
I don't know. Well, I mean, just, you know, sometimes when you have an idea in your head, you're like, yeah, this is a good idea. And someone says, no, it's shit. It's like, no, it's not. It's a great idea.
And what do you think happens when he beats the beefcake? Do you think, because the whole event is around beating the beefcake.
Yep.
Do you think everyone else just goes home?
Well, I would have thought that like Spider-Man would then stay on. Yeah,
it's like
when
it stays on.
Yeah, then have to, yeah.
But no, he just gets $100 and told to leave.
God bless him.
That was one of the cooler moments of the movie. Okay. And another thing, if we're going to talk about...
I love that. Sorry, every time I think about it, it's like, bone saw is ready. So funny.
It's a good scene. It has a problematic line. Do we want to dwell on that anymore or chalk that up to 2002?
Chalk it up to 2002, but also like, I thought that it, I was, I think that really stuck out because... Mm. The rest of the film is relatively fine, apart from Kirsten Dunst's boobs.
It just doesn't. Given how
problematic we found Iron Man from 2008.
Yeah, true. That is such a good point.
With the stripper pole coming out of the jet floor, or whatever it was.
Do you think it was meant to make you hate the beefcake and be like, ah, screw this stupid beefcake?
No, I just thought gay jokes were in vogue in the early 2000s.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, just a very, very unfortunate choice. Very unfortunate choice, but well, moving on.
Moving on, so if we're talking more of the caricature things about this movie that I like, and this is a bit, it took me a little while to adjust, but when I settled in, I liked it.
Okay.
It's just everything about Green Goblin.
Okay.
Is in like, not Willem Dafoe. It's not that I think he's a bad person or actor, it's just he's got a weird face. But Green Goblin's costume and hoverboard in everything in this are brilliant.
Oh, what?
It's fantastic. It's like, we have to stick to the comic books.
Yeah.
Make me a comic book realistic outfit, costume, and that's what's going to happen.
And that's what
it's so impractical.
That's what all the later MCU films tried to do, is like take what was comic book, but then make it super real and a bit gritty.
Yeah.
Whereas this is just like,
let's do it.
No, he's gonna look like,
he's a Green Goblin.
Yeah. So, but what I really liked about, there's two things I really liked about Green Goblin. One was William Dafoe's acting in the mirror. I thought he did that kind of weird
The Gollum stuff there.
I really liked that until they went to the long shot. Like, I really liked the conversation he was having with himself. That was really great. And he fought for this role, apparently.
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah, he wasn't, I don't think he was the first choice, but he really wanted to do it. And yeah, I thought that showed, you know, his face is perfect for it, like, really. But I didn't like when they showed him from behind, he was doing that weird, like, walk up to the mirror. That was really strange. But any time that he was gobby, was good.
And
he felt it.
The other thing that I really liked about Green Goblin's costume was, it was really scary to look at. And then in the close-ups, you could just see behind the kind of mesh mouthpiece, William Dafoe's acting behind it.
Yeah.
And it was always this where your eyes kind of focused was like, oh, terrifying Green Goblin. But then this also kind of really good mouth acting.
Yeah.
I thought it was super fun.
No, I thought it was fun as well. I thought his hoverboard was unnecessary.
Oh, God, the pumpkin things where they skeletonize people. Mental.
And I do think he played Green Goblin incredibly well.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's the Norman Osborn stuff, where he's acting in the mirror was great. He was just very, like, you know, like, if he came to dinner at my house, I'd be like, can we not?
Oh, well, that Thanksgiving scene,
can
I was
we not
just
come
like,
to dinner
ooh,
at my
no,
house.
No, no, no. Yeah.
I'm not having this. I don't want...
Yeah, but I think he played also, like, the distant, successful, disappointed in your father role really well as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, like, a standout for me in this.
But, okay, what was Green Goblin's plan? Was he, like... Was he just totally mental, like, just wanted to watch the world burn type thing? I mean...
So I think he was trying to generate business inquiries for his technology.
Guerrilla marketing.
Yeah, so he was like, terrorism's a problem.
Right.
I will be the terrorist to stimulate
demand.
I think
it's so similar to Ant-Man.
You know, that's what I was thinking as well. I felt like there was a lot of parallels there between him and Cross? I want to say Cross?
Yeah, Cross.
Yeah. Yellow
Cross
Jacket.
Industries.
Yeah.
How he's looking to sell tech.
Hmm.
And a solution to, like, governments and stuff.
Yeah.
And when it all goes kind of wrong, he's just like, fine, fuck you.
Again, though, you know how I said in the Ant-Man podcast how, like, what was Cross doing, like, peddling the shrinking technology when he had a goop gun, which the military would have been wildly interested in. Yeah, similar here. It's like, oh, check out my glider and my maybe working formula stuff. Or I've got this bomb that reduces people to skeletons, like, instantly. And my son, who's standing 10 feet away, will not be harmed. So, you know.
And, you know, he could sell hoverboards, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if he just peddled hoverboards.
He could have been the Elon Musk of the early 2000s.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With skeleton bombs and hoverboards.
Totally.
You know, it was...
But I also... So, the conversation... Like, so after the... I can't really remember the order of things. I think he absconds with Spidey at one point. He wakes up on the roof with him. And he has this chat, which... He had a line in it that I really liked about how, it was unclear about exactly what he wanted Spider-Man to do with him. Like, let's, you know, tear the world down. But one thing he said, what's the alternative? Either you and I fight it out for years to come with countless innocent lives being killed, you know, in the crosshairs. So I was like, that is actually a really good point.
Well, we like a villain we can believe in, don't we? Yeah. If you learn anything from Black Panther and Michael B. Jordan.
True. I mean, this is not the same level as Killmonger, but I get your point.
William Dafoe, I think, is still a little bit sexy.
Yeah. Really?
Interesting.
I'm not going to question your judgment.
If you have more stuff to say about Green Goblin.
I mean, not too much to say about Green Goblin. I was just going to move on to talking about his relationship with his son and how he changes his attitude towards his son, Harry, as the movie goes on. So, you know, we start off and he's pretty much like, you know, you're a loser. I prefer Petey over here. He's cool.
And I'll put you both up in a really extravagant apartment.
Oh, yeah. It's
Manhattan.
It's true. I don't understand what their relationship is, really. But
strained.
I'm just gonna roll with it.
Yeah.
But then he, I think Harry is so like desperate for that fatherly attention.
Oh, totally.
He's just like, come on, Dad.
Yeah.
Give it to me. Give me your weird greenness.
Oh my God.
You know, he's straight in there.
Yeah. I mean, you see it like when, you know, he says all that horrible stuff about Mary Jane and Harry just like, it's like, yeah, fine.
Yeah.
Don't talk about my dad. Like, you know, bad. It's, yeah.
And, oh God, would.
But also, speaking of relationships with parents, I thought that MJ's like home domestic life thing was a bit thin.
Yeah,
well, like she just like ran out and had to cry by the bins, and that was like enough of a character arc for her.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
That really, yeah. I mean,
but then she as well on the same thing, and then she runs straight down to like Flash.
Yeah,
in the alleyway, who's just waffling on at her.
I just think she. I wouldn't be surprised if every writer for this was male.
Oh yeah. Like, well, I mean, also like. Let's look at the costume design. Nope, no bras.
Yeah.
Print, go. Like, oh my god.
There
like,
was a lot of nipple.
I had forgotten about that. Like, yeah. Surely, like, that level of nipple now would, like, up the rating of the film a bit. I agree. Like, it's true. Like, Mary Jane, until the most recent incarnations, has always been, I'm not that knowledgeable about, like, the comics themselves, but her character seems to have, she just acts as sort of like a support mechanism and a motivation for Spider-Man without too much else behind it. So I think the kind of rocky home life, yeah, was an attempt to let's interject a little bit of character, I don't know, interest in there or something. But yeah, it didn't really work for me.
Me neither.
Man. And I think it's interesting as well, like, so her whole sort of obsession with Spider-Man, like she's really... She's really into Spider-Man, but by the end of the movie she's saying like how, oh, it's always been you, Pete. I thought that was like a little bit thin as well, like other than a few times where he's clearly stalked her to auditions, and then like the nice, you know, by dying on May's bedside. I really wanted there to be more, because she was such a thin character. I so wish there had been more from MJ's side to show why this is someone she would reach out to and kind of latch on to, as opposed to being like, all right, maybe it's time for me to be on my own for a little while and just like, you know, I keep getting targeted by psychopaths, so maybe it's best that I just like strike out on my own for a bit.
But it wasn't even like a love triangle, because there was Harry as well. So it was like you had Harry, Peter Parker, and Spider-Man. Like that's a lot of like,
it was pretty low.
Like a love Venn diagram.
Yeah.
Oh, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a three-way Venn diagram where Spidey and Peter overlap for certain reasons.
Yes.
And Peter and
Harry
overlap for certain reasons. But then Harry and Spider-Man also overlap for other reasons. And in the middle, you've got MJ.
And she's just, I don't think she's complex enough to hold together all those different strands.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, she is meant to be a teenager, a kid, child as well.
Yeah for fine. The first part.
We probably shouldn't be seeing her nipples then.
So, but back to my point like 20 minutes ago, dude, that, you know, it's weird, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think she has no... And the writing... Yeah, okay. You know, she's not got anything great to hang it on. But, I mean... I don't know what you feel, but I don't think the portrayal of MJ has any charisma behind it in this. There's no one that makes you kind of see it from Peter's perspective and go, wow, she is amazing.
No. Yeah.
You know, like in other films, you know, we've always seen why, I guess, people would think that the, you know, the Mary Jane or Gwen Stacy character or anything is like, they're so great and I guess why this feels so affectionate for them. But in this, you know, she runs out and cries by the bins. He stares at her creepily through the window. Yeah. Like, you know, she tells him off at one point.
It is straight. I had kind of forgotten how nothing she is in this. And not only that, but like at every turn we're told she's a terrible actress. So like, really, what does she have going on?
She's in 2 and 3, right? She's definitely in 2.
Definitely in 2. I can't remember. I think she's in.
Maybe we'll get more development in.
Yes.
In Spider-Man 2.
Yeah. Well, because I do like Kirsten Dunst. Like I think she is talented. She just wasn't. She wasn't given enough to do here. She was just damsel in distress. I'm hoping. I feel like I remember a bit more from her next season. I can't remember. Not next season. Next movie.
We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Yeah.
But but the other thing is like. Oh, like all the women in this. Like I was really, really remembering about how when we were talking about Melissa Tomei as the new Aunt May, you said it was like a nice breath of fresh air because before this, Aunt May was pretty much just characterized by grief, and she just constantly comes across as this like feeble, broken old woman. And I didn't mind her when I like watched the first time and everything, that didn't really struck me, but I think now this is one thing that I think really, really suffers by comparison.
Yeah. Totally changed the tone in the comic books. In the comic books of how they portray Aunt May as well.
Yeah.
Like they've not suddenly, you know, de-aged Aunt May, but she is more less grief-driven and more proactive, community-driven.
Yeah.
Trying to solve people's issues in the community, and you know everyone's like, oh, it's May Parker, she's amazing, and everyone rallies around her and she does loads of things, and it's like the whole idea of her being just someone sat at home, she's useless because Uncle Ben's died, is really, really dated in this movie, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. So the only other female character you have is Elizabeth Banks. Did you remember that she was in this film? Because I did not.
Like, I didn't remember that she was, but I spotted her.
Yeah. It's like Elizabeth Banks. She plays John Jonah Jameson's secretary. Yeah. Long suffering secretary. So there's a stark lack of like female characters in this. Which, you know, that's not unique to this superhero movie, but yeah, it was just a reminder of like, oh yeah. That, considering that we're counting down to Black Widow as well.
So something else that I had not remembered, along with the lack of women, was how like gothic this film was. So like I was really surprised at like the score and the set design feeling really similar to the 90s Batman films.
Yeah,
so it's kind of like, especially like Green Goblin or William Dafoe's like mansion thing.
Sure.
All had that kind of like faded green kind of exterior with like gargoyles.
Yeah.
And so then I looked it up because I was like, this is really, really similar to the Tim Burton Batman films in particular, with those kind of like those like leering shots of like oversized skyscrapers and all that kind of stuff. So Danny Elfman did the soundtrack for this, and you can hear that. But then the same set designer did the Batman films and did this as well.
Really?
Yeah. So like,
that's really interesting.
So I was like, are some of these like skyscrapers the same?
That's as really before? Funny.
Oh, I think you only really noticed when it was like the super kind of gothic villainy sort of sets. I think there's a really good light and shade in this film, but yeah, it just felt really more Batman-y than I remembered.
That's really interesting, because actually I do remember kind of being struck by that on the scene when like Harry and MJ are on that balcony and Goblin's coming like during the parade, like the sort of like those. The not gargoyles, but like the sculptures of them like holding up structures and everything, that is really like
giant
Gotham
kind of
Batman.
Yes, as well, like a parade through New York always kind of reminds me of Batman films. I think I don't know.
Well, I mean, Sam Raimi, you know, horror movie roots, like, so maybe he wanted to mimic a bit of that feel to it. That's quite interesting though. I think Danny Elfman's score is great in this. Like, it's such like iconic music. I mean, Danny Elfman is always like incredible, but I definitely felt that a few times in this film, being like, oh yeah, this is like the sound of Superman. This is the sound of Spider-Man, even a bit more so than even though I do prefer the like Tom Holland Spider-Man movies. The sound of this movie sounded like Spider-Man to me, which I liked.
Fair. It's not surprising that they went to the most recent, I guess. I wouldn't be surprised if there's even more members of the cast and crew that, you know, they just went, how was the most recent superhero movies? Let's get them to come do it. Because I guess there was just such a lack of this style of story around them.
And I think this really set the style for especially kind of major city-based superhero films, like those kind of big sweeping shots, using infrastructure quite a lot, using the idea of like wealth and class and that sort of stuff. Like, I think there's lots of like signifiers in this film that you see replicated again and again, mainly in kind of like the lazier superhero films, I think. But still, this is, I think this is the archetype for for superhero films of that era.
Well, because it broke the mold in so many ways. Like, this was like our first, so what did we have before? We had the Batmans, which had that really like gothic kind of style. We had Blade, again, really dark, really gothic. What else, Flash Gordon, Superman. I guess Superman, there's kind of a...
movies knocking around.
I guess Superman is the only one that kind of, I think, kind of feels a bit similar in kind of tone and like kind of palette and everything. But this,
it's the red and the blue.
It is. Well, yeah. what
and
I say?
Daylight.
And daylight, yeah.
But I tell you one, you know, the swinging scenes are pretty cool. They nailed that. Aside from the one where he's a wooden statue that... MJ's holding on to
it. The CGI in this was not bad. It did not. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
No, there wasn't anything massively terrible. There was. I've put a note here, and I don't know why I'm referring to, but I've got something that says the armor suit looks like a giant flying hot dog. What am I referring to there?
Oh, I know.
The video.
It's the Quest Tech.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like the rival company. It does look like a metal hot dog.
It just looks like a giant metal hot dog.
When a Green Goblin comes and blows them all up. I mean, his glider was so much cooler than that. The Quest Aerospace. That's so funny.
And then...
That's exactly what I was playing.
You know, at the crescendo of the movie as well, when Green Goblin gets, you know, pinned to a wall.
Oh, through the nuts. Jesus Christ.
Like, I thought some of the visuals around there with, you know, with the flying hoverboard and him suddenly just one button and it does exactly what he's thinking is, you know, a bit implausible, but it's cool. You know, I mean, everything looks great. The fighting scenes at the end look really cool.
Definitely. That held up way more than I remember, than I thought it was going to. Like, it's brutal as well. Like, Tobey Maguire, Peter Parker is getting wailed on in that.
But I also think in this film, there isn't a huge amount of, like, action scenes as we've come to expect them from, like, modern Marvel films. Like, there really is, like, two moments. There's the bit where Macy Gray's parade gets interrupted and there's that MJ falling off the balcony.
Yeah.
And then there's the kind of, like, the bit on the bridge where he has to choose between MJ and saving the school bus for the children.
Which is a little, like, MJ would never have survived that.
Oh, no.
Like, she fell, like, 40 foot and just grabbed onto something.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe she should be the superhero.
Oh, yeah.
Broken an arm. She'd be in... river.
But there wasn't, like, I don't know whether my expectations are too high, and you know, throughout previous seasons I've been like, well, there's too much destruction. You know, like some of the battles for New York, there's just like damage
total
beyond
carnage.
Repair. But I don't know, I felt like this, like, it wasn't too easy for Spider-Man to win, but it wasn't.
There was the house on fire fight scene as well, where he does, like, the spinny trick
through the
pumpkin blades.
But it wasn't, I don't know, for an action movie, there wasn't a huge amount of big set pieces.
That's a fair point.
And, like, Green Goblin was defeated by New York people, like, throwing rubbish at him off the bridge.
The thing also, like, I think, so...
happened, I was like, oh, they've got him now.
Yeah.
He's done for.
There's rolled up his tin
foil. You have to remember, again, like, dating this movie a bit, like, when it came out, because I don't know if you guys remember, but, like, in the really original trailers for this movie, there was the scene with the Twin Towers. So I think... that scene with the New Yorkers, you mess with one of us, you mess with all of us, like, definitely got put in as, like, a New York type thing. I kind of like that when the New Yorkers got involved. I think that line was too much, but I
can't wait for them to film superhero movie here in Leeds, and we'll bloody show them right good time. Walloping right between eyeballs.
But I know what you mean, the sorry.
I'm just going to apologise for Dan being so Leeds.
Yeah,
he
is
no one
so
knows what's
Leeds.
Going on.
But
Leeds is a city in England.
Yeah. It's where we record this podcast.
Our listeners are not that removed from reality.
But no, but some of them listen. We've got American listeners. Yep. We've got Australian listeners. I don't know where we are.
Got one in Singapore. Not one. I think we have more than one. But I know what you mean about the...
we've got five listeners.
We've got five. Our dozens of fans.
We've got one listener who just travels.
Yeah.
Oh. Listens to us on those long-haul flights.
Oh, right. Okay.
But I know what you mean about the action pieces. It is more just like... really quick kind of one-on-one, very like smashing. Actually, it's kind of hard to even sort of remember, like, so the scene when Green Goblin crashes into the Daily Bugle and tries to get like Jameson to tell him who takes a picture of Spider-Man. Good moment for Jonah. I really liked that when he didn't give him up. But even that, like, in, you're right, in like kind of any modern movie, that suddenly would have become a big fight scene between Goblin and Spider-Man again, but instead it was just a sleep dust.
And maybe some like minions.
Yeah. Sort of that the other thing. That's a really interesting thing.
No goons.
Yes.
Yeah. Nothing.
That's such a good point, because usually in movies nowadays you have a legion of disposable goons that the superhero could just tear through, and you're just not supposed to think about the fact that he's straight up just killed a guy. Because only the main villain matters.
But if they're the children of Thanos, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I think, it was like weirdly small.
Yes.
Weirdly like contained. Small set pieces. Mm. But maybe in light of what happened in 9/11, and they probably just didn't have as much money as they do nowadays.
But we see it in other Spider-Man movies as well. I mean, you know, we're not talking about two recent movies too much, but, you know, in Homecoming, Vulture is a very, there's not many goons in that.
Very true.
Yeah. I think got to give this movie a lot of a big break for it being an origin story and it being the first Spider-Man movie. So while an origin story is a big groan to us now, actually then it was probably quite fresh.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what it's easy to do is look back and say, oh, they didn't tell the personal, they didn't tell any sort of interesting personal story with Peter Parker, which is what like 9/10 of Spider-Man is about.
Yeah.
But actually, at the time in the play, probably it did feel like quite a personal story with him and J. Jonah and with Mary Jane and with Uncle Ben and all that. Maybe that, you know, probably to a lot of people, this was the first introduction to that.
Oh, yeah.
Sigh and a groan origin story. But, I mean, they got the personal element of Peter Parker in focus in the movie and Spider-Man, how, you know, he is an individual. He doesn't always have, like, an army of people behind him to call upon.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, especially he gets a lot of slack for that in more recent movies where he can just be like, you know, fucking Tony Stark, come out. Robots your way, get you out of trouble. I think probably what we're missing is just a little bit more of the people on his side in high school.
Yeah. Yeah, I really felt that as well in this. I mean, again, we've got the newer Holland Spider-Man's to compare him to, but the feeling of that there was literally nobody on his side, like that was harder to stomach this time. Like, just
like, nope. Harry was not the guy in the chair, was he?
No,
he was not there for him.
He was not a great friend.
It was never like shock reveal when Harry turned out to be sleazy and on the opposite side.
No.
Yeah.
It was like, you should have seen that coming.
Yeah, definitely.
We could have really just done with an extra person who was that voice that he confided in, so that we not just saw what he was going through, but heard what he was going through.
Totally.
Because he didn't even use Aunt May or Uncle Ben for that in this movie. So I think that's a big swing and a miss.
Yeah.
On my part.
I really miss Ned.
Missing characters. I've covered pretty much a lot of my feelings about this movie. Mm. You know, I've highlighted the negatives, but I think there's some positives.
Do you think we've won you over?
I think probably the stuff we preloaded all the things that I am not a big fan of, and we have been able to get to the fun stuff a bit later on.
So can I talk you through who's on the soundtrack for this film?
Oh, please do. Yes.
Because I feel like
I remember this soundtrack so well.
Sing us out.
If this has aged, you know, if the film, I don't think the film has aged that badly, really. Especially if you compare it to like some of the like early Harry Potters.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They look awful nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, it's because Tobey Maguire's not famous anymore. But the soundtrack...
What was the last movie that Tobey Maguire was in?
I genuinely can't remember. Seabiscuit?
So, But I think the soundtrack dates it, and I remember having this on CD.
Me too.
CD-ROM,
me
and
too.
Being obsessed with it, but none of the songs are in the film.
Oh no! But no, that was so. But that was a thing back then. That yeah. like even if they weren't in the film,
not
if
even
it was
the
like
credits.
Yeah. Well, there was one the Nickelback song, but I can yeah. still remember being in the school's so, like literary magazine office, just listening to this CD on repeat.
So you've got.
Just before we go on, it was Boss Baby in 2017.
Wow.
Oh, God.
Yeah. No so upcoming projects.
We've got Chad Kroeger featuring Josie Scott. And they say that a hero will save us.
Was that this one? I thought that was Spider-Man 2.
So on my version of this that I have at
Nickelback.
Home, you can watch this music video.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible.
Are they on
it?
A roof?
Yeah.
Yes.
And then.
I thought
so
was...
Chad Kroeger is a lead singer of
Nickelback. Oh, right. Okay.
He did it as a solo artist.
Gotcha.
Some 41.
They're on like a rooftop, aren't yeah. they? Oh, it's yeah. the worst.
Alien Ant Farm.
Oh my God.
Corey Taylor, the lead singer of Stone Sour and Slipknot.
Right, yes.
With a song called Bother. The Strokes. The Hives. Oh, hate to say I told you so. All right. Macy Gray's on there,
of
obviously,
course she is,
doing
yeah.
a number. And then Aerosmith cover the theme from Spider-Man.
Oh my God.
To close out the CD. So yeah, that's 19 songs, and I just remember that soundtrack so vividly from my youth.
When the credits closed, I was like, oh yeah, this song, this song.
From HMV.
Yeah, oh, I think so. My kind of final thoughts on this film is that I think this film is kind of like it's done. Like I could see like maybe one day like showing it to like a kid or a nephew or something like that, but. With what the way young people stories are told now, like what we get out of the Tom Holland films, the way that there's more intelligent storytelling about people's sort of emotions, journeys, things like that, I don't really see this film necessarily holding its place in the kind of pantheon of good storytelling through a superhero medium. That being said, because of its sort of personal experience for me being that age, seeing it for the first time, like this film meant something to me, and it in a lot of, I mean, X-Men was kind of my first introduction into oh my God, yeah, superhero films, but this felt really real, like you said, Dan, like this idea of anyone can be Spider-Man. Go Web, go.
If people who can't see the
he's just being Spider-Man,
he's just being Spider-Man,
putting my hands in the Spider-Man
classic Spider-Man position
and pretending to shoot webs all over the room,
which is incredibly painful for me. I cannot do this. Maybe, yeah, it's on my left hand, it absolutely kills, like have my, I would never be able to press hard enough to release it.
You can't do that.
That's really painful.
This is not good.
Sorry, this is terrible audio content.
But Anna can't extend her fingers into the heavy metal horns position.
Nope, can't do it.
And
can't
shoot imaginary webs from her.
It was
weird.
Yeah, it was a real gutting realization when I was younger. Anyway,
but
so
I think I agree in that I don't know, I was going back into this being like, oh, really dreading rewatching some of these in the same way that I was with some of the Wolverine films, but actually I really enjoyed this, and I do think it will be, I think this film, maybe with the exclusively this film and not any of the others, will be the one that's remembered as starting us on this kind of path for actually good superhero films that are blockbusters, that are summer specials, that are like a really big deal.
Yeah, I think so.
This film was like made like a ton of money. This is like still one of the highest grossing films of all time.
Yeah,
like it's huge. It's a huge deal. But I think my enthusiasm for Spider-Man films is going to wane after this point.
I don't know. I'm really looking forward to 2. I remember enjoying 2 more than 1.
I'm not looking forward to 3.
I'm not looking forward to 3 either.
Well, you've got a lot of Spider-Man movies to look forward to. Before we really wrap up then, let's just have a go around. This movie, does it stay or does it go?
It totally stays.
Stays in the history of Spider-Man.
Heck yeah.
It's canon. It's now a Marvelous Lunch Break canon. Martin?
Yeah, it stays.
It's obviously going to stay for you. I'm going to begrudgingly say it stays with a caveat that this movie only stays on the basis of, I believe, its existence has prevented us from having to have more Spider-Man origin stories.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay? Other than that, it's not a box set that I'll be looking to own. I'm gonna say. And by the way, just to a little update on box sets, I don't know, has anyone seen the amazing all the Act One, the Marvel Cinematic Universe box set that they released, the Infinity box set.
Oh my God.
It's America only. It was released like November last year. America only. Jesus. Beautiful box set. Can't get it. Well, you can't get it for Love and a Toffee now because it was immediately sold out.
Of course it was.
But it wasn't available in the UK at all. It was crazy.
I spent hundreds of pounds.
It was like, yeah, it was high 100 and something or £200. But I've went and trekked myself because I was, you know, recently turned a ripe age.
Happy birthday, Dan.
Happy birthday, Dan.
Dan turned 30.
Oh, great. I trekked myself.
Is this where you bought a birthday cake?
No.
Oh.
And this is a, you know, you will know this is an odd purchase for me, is I trekked myself to the four Act One MCU box sets on Blu-ray. And so
these
are the first Blu-rays I've ever owned, and they're the only DVDs that I currently own.
Except for the Spider-Man movies at the moment. We're sharing a box,
aren't
we?
I've got Spider-Man on loan. Yeah. I don't have the case for it. I don't think. Oh, no, I do have the case. Yeah.
You owe me two
case
for
Spider-Man 2. With Spider-Man 1 in it. It makes no sense. But yeah, four box sets. And I am just so excited to own those movies.
Okay. Do you know what I mean? Not Spider-Man, but you're excited to get back into the MCU.
I'm just talking about box sets.
All right.
You know,
if you rewatch any of them, you have to re-listen to what the corresponding episode of season one.
No, definitely.
I'm not doing that at all. But I just thought it's such an exciting series of movies. And, you know, maybe at the end of Spider-Man 3, I'll be desperate to keep this box set as well. But
feels unlikely.
You need to perk up. You need to cheer up.
Come on, Dan. We've got so many left.
I'm get more excited when the movies get rubbish.
I'm excited for Andrew Garfield.
This didn't have anything too rubbish or too great for me to get excited about.
Okay. Yeah.
But when things get truly terrible, then the fireworks will happen.
Okay. All right.
So for me it stays, for you it stays, for you it stays. And we are staying for the duration of season three.
Oh
if
God,
you want to stay along with us, see that segue there? That's a good hook. Not being the presenting school or anything. So you can find us online. Martin, where can you find the podcast?
A Marvelous Lunch Break.
And I mean, that's our social media, but what about the podcast?
Oh, right. Well, if you listen to it, you've already found it, but you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, we're on
Stitcher,
Deezer, Heart,
Castbox.
Anywhere you might want to listen, we are there.
Yes.
Brilliant.
And send us your thoughts, comments.
Yeah, we really like reading them.
Love reading them out.
Please, and if you sent stuff in before as well, you know, if you're a friend of the pod.
Yeah.
Please do get back in touch and let us know you're tuning in for season three as well.
And let us know your thoughts on any Spider-Man movies that have happened, that are upcoming, what you think about any of these. And follow us, Anna.
A Marvelous Lunch Break.
And that's over on Instagram.
Yep.
Thank you so much for swinging by. Season three, I haven't missed anything. We're back. I've finished.
We're back.
This is it.
We are back.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yep, we're getting sued.
Bye.
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 Post credits?
There isn't one.
There isn't a post credits, which is kind of crazy, right?
Like, so did post credits only come in with post credits
era?
Did they come
I
in
think
with
so.
Iron Man?
Yeah.
Was Iron Man? I don't think Iron Man was the originator because we ironed this out in X-Men that there was
X-Men.
But the expectation for them, I think the MCU really cemented that. Kind of a relief, really. God, it must suck for cinema employees now having to hang around. You can't start cleaning the theater before the credits run.
Or for podcast listeners to have to skip through our theme music just to get to this.
I've stopped waiting for post credits.
Yeah.
They're always on
Once
YouTube,
again,
aren't
just
they?
Just watch. Yeah. They're immediately on YouTube.
They do come back into the Spider-Mans later, though, so we will be talking about real post-credits.
We'll persistently still have a post-credits section.
Excellent.
It's, you know, the expectation now exists on us.
Too
so
true.
So we can't not fulfill.
What are we going to talk about?
We'll find a way.
Thank you. We'll find a way. Maybe next time we'll share the biggest piece of trivia that you've read about the movie on IMDb.
Oh, tune in for that.
Other people can read IMDb themselves. I don't know. You figure something out.
We'll think about it.
You don't have a section. So we've got I do the whole podcast. Yeah. Anna does the talking fast and the snack.
Talking fast.
What do you?
Do you think did you enjoy my Marvel themed jokes from the Christmas special? Shall I bring a Spider-Man joke per?
And now from me joke.
Right, I'm going to bring a joke next week. Right,
excellent. Stick around for the post credits for Martin's jokes.
Is it
going
to be a Spider-Man themed joke?
Well, yeah, of course it is.
Okay. Excellent.
Stick around for Martin's.
Stick around.
Spider-Man themed. Yes. My joke section now, bitch.
Right, bye.
Brilliant. Bye.
Bye.